right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
And you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 7 o'clock tonight. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk football as Heimir Hallgrímsson prepares for Portugal and Hungary. A look back in the Champions League over the last two nights as well. And Shells and Shamrock Rovers in action this evening. Stephen Ferris on the Ireland team to play Japan on Saturday, which was named by Andy Farrell today. And Jeff Shepherd is here with Eye on America as well. 51552 for your texts. And Keith Tracy, I'm delighted to say, is with me in studio. How are you doing, Keith?
I'm great.
Good to see you.
Shamrock Rovers have just won a penalty as well here.
Have they?
Yeah, they've just got in behind John McGovern for the fourth time. Before you've even asked me, Shamrock Rovers have been right up against it for the first 17 minutes or so. They've got down the other end of the park. McGovern spun in behind, and the AEK Athens defenders just made an absolutely awful decision. Running towards the byline, his first touch is great. Gets him in front of the centre back. He decides to run into the back of McGovern. He puts the brakes on, wins the penalty. That's excellent from Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, brilliant. As you say, you know, it's been all the home side at the moment. Tough place to go, Athens as well. You know, good side.
Oh, yeah, notoriously tough. And some of the players they've got out there, they've got a whole host of internationals. And obviously VAR are going to have a look at this. But, you know, how often have we seen centre-forwards get themselves in front of defenders, hit the brakes and fall over? It's generally given. So I can't imagine VAR would have any complaints with this. But these days, you just don't know, do you?
No, you just know. And you can't second guess. And just when you think you have the decision right, it goes the other way. So look, we'll keep an eye on it in the next few seconds or so. They're going to have a look. The referee's jogging over to have a look at the penalty, and we'll let you know what happens there. How's your sleep patterns these days? Are you sleeping all right?
Not too bad.
Because I tell you, if you're struggling, right, Gareth Southgate has a new book out. It's called Dear England, Lessons in Leadership by Gareth Southgate. An exercise in passive-aggressive self-justification. That is the review on the Guardian website. Jesus, could you imagine anything worse than reading that book?
I thought being passive-aggressive was a bad thing.
Well, this is what the reviewer says. Classically dull elite football manager trope that Southgate sticks to, doggedly using the words leader, leading or leadership at least 500 times in 316 pages. Christ, could you imagine that?
I put it on my Christmas list.
I'll tell you what. Anyway, look, still no penalty decision there, but Champions League last two nights. Look, obviously great win by Liverpool. I know it's two nights old and the lads talked about it last night. I know you were involved on commentary duty for Bayern Munich against PSG, I should say, and they were very impressive there. And then last night, Foden back and forth, Man City get it done.
Yeah, Man City, again, I've been so reactive at Manchester City throughout the season. Sometimes I watch them and think that they're not good enough, but the more I watch them, Phil Foden, Pep Guardiola is saying today that it looks like the old Phil Foden is coming back to the party.
It does seem like it, doesn't it?
It does seem like it. He's demanding he's going to get back into the English squad, which I imagine he will do as well. And look, even if a lot of those lads don't come to the party, with Erling Haaland being in the form he's in, you would imagine Manchester City are going to go deep in every competition they're in. Do I think they'll win it? I think they're a little bit down the ladder, to be honest. I'm a huge, huge fan of PSG, and I know he got beat by Bayern Munich the other night, but I still think when the chips are down, Luis Enrique and that PSG team are just absolutely sensational. Bayern Munich will be close, and look, I know I'm an Arsenal fan, but I think Arsenal will be close enough at the end.
I tell you, Arsenal are absolutely fine, and we were only talking about this on Tuesday night as well. They are, I think that's now 10 games, consecutive victories, 8 clean sheets on top of that as well. Defensively, they're rock solid. Eze's made a difference, I think, in terms of the signing. And even with Gyökeres out injured, so Marino scored twice the other night. They look very strong, don't they?
Yeah, everybody looks strong. It's not just, you know, one or two players. Over the last couple of years, we've maybe been guilty of looking at Bakayo Saka to do everything, and a Martin Odegaard. And Odegaard's had his injury worries already at this early stage of the season, as has Bakayo Saka. And at times, Arsenal would have just folded, would have dropped so many points already that they'd be so far down the league, you're thinking they can't go and win it. But they've been able to deal with it. I think Zubimendi is one that's going under the radar. People are speaking about Gyökeres and Declan Rice being so good. Eze as well has been excellent. But Zubimendi is one I really, really enjoy watching.
Penalty's been given for Shamrock Rovers here. So chance to go 1-0 up in Greece against AEK Athens. And I was looking at the penalty conversion rate in the Champions League so far. It's been absolutely abysmal, but no mistake. Great penalty.
Unbelievable. Graham Bourke. Ice cold, brilliant left foot.
What a start.
Never ever looked like missing. Brilliant from Graham Bourke. And as I say, look, Rovers have been absolutely up against it for the opening 20 minutes. And I was going to say, there's so many checkpoints. AEK Athens have scored 4 times inside the first 30 minutes in this European competition already. So I'd imagine Stephen Bradley would say, get to the first 20 minutes checkpoint, make sure you don't concede. And the 1-0 up, absolutely outstanding. There's a long way to go.
Long way to go.
And, you know, AEK look an absolutely classy outfit. So Shamrock Rovers will have to defend really, really well. And I was seeing odds as deep as 8-1 on for AEK Athens to win tonight.
Yeah, there you go. Well, look, obviously, as you say, look, there is a long way to go, but they couldn't have started any better. And the penalty, yeah, beautifully taken to the right-hand side by Burke. So 1-0 to Shamrock Rovers. Shelburne in action against Drogheda in the Conference League later on. We'll cross over to John Kenny in Tallaght Stadium to bring you all the team news ahead of that. Right, look, let's talk about the squad today, names. So the big talking point, before I get your thoughts, let's hear from Heimer Hallgrimsson today, because he spoke to Tony O'Donoghue. The big news today, and a surprise for everyone, 26-year-old New York City Kevin O'Toole has been included for the very first time. Odd decision, you might say. Let's see what Heimer had to say to Tony on his decision.
Well, when I came, we just looked at our options. We wanted to have him in when we were planning a May camp. Obviously, I've seen him play for quite some time because I was watching a lot of MLS when I was in Jamaica. And we had a left back at New York from Jamaica. So I saw quite a few games from them. And yeah, that's where I saw him play. And since maybe a year ago, he was in the process of getting his clearance to play for Ireland. So been having one eye on him, but he only got his clearance 2 weeks ago. And he's playing in a position we're lacking depth, especially at the moment. So that's why we selected him now. Obviously, because of his quality, he's a good left back. Going forward, good engine, good crosses, but he's also really good 1v1 in defense. So qualities are there. Obviously, at this stage of the campaign, is maybe not the best thing to be looking at players for the first time, but given the situation we have obviously Robbie Brady is out, Ryan Manning is suspended for the Portugal game, and then Josh Hunahan has been struggling with injuries, and is kind of being protected by Shamrock playing every other game, and he has a groin problem. And then we have, who else? There's one more injury from that position. Doc has played there. Matt Doherty has played there. He is injured. Yeah, so we were just short and shallow in that position, and I thought it was a good time to bring him in, especially now because he has his clearance.
How would you describe his attributes?
Yeah, good engine, quick, skillful, technical player, and good going up and down the pitch. So that's his attributes, but mainly as well, a really good character, wants to improve. He's 26 years old, played regularly for now 3 years in LAFC, and been playing well. So that's his strength. He's not like a young player that we are testing, he has experience.
Can I ask you though, the MLS is one thing, coming up against the João Pedro or any of the Portuguese stars, that might be a big ask.
That's what we will see once it comes, and obviously we're going to assess him on the trainings, and a new player coming in at this stage is not ideal, but we know, but he will bring more depth into that position for us for sure. But I know it's unusual to be testing players at this stage, but it was necessary for us to find a left back that we think can help us in this moment.
And Josh Onan is with Shamrock Rovers in Athens as we speak, maybe involved in the cup final on Sunday. If he comes through that, would you not consider him for that position?
We know him. We called him in last camp, and he was struggling and is struggling with a groin injury. So they are very protective of him at this stage. I don't think he will play tonight. But definitely they want him to play the cup final, I would guess. I'm not picking the team for Rovers, but we know his situation. Obviously we have an eye on him, and he is one that would have been in our squad if fit.
Yeah, so there's Heimer Hallgrimsson justifying his decision to select this guy, Kevin O'Toole. So Honahan's not playing tonight in Athens, we know that. Are you buying his rationale that it's because we're a little bit short on the left-hand side of defence, and this is why this guy's been called up?
No, not really. I know he said his passport and whatever else has been in the works for the last year or so. And he said himself it's probably not the best time to be having a look at a player that we haven't seen in this sort of deep water before. So Look, I, when I was in the squads with Trapattoni, you know, you were always told that World Cup qualifiers were the peak of the tree, and you can't be just willy-nilly picking people. And I know, look, he's playing for New York City. He's played 26 MLS games this season. He scored one goal and he's one assist. Again, I know that's not a defender's job, a left-back's job. But when Tony asked Hamer there what's his attributes, never once did he say he can defend.
Yeah.
And I find it so strange in modern-day football that you play left-back, you play right-back. Nobody seems to have to be able to defend in those positions. So my first part of the call would be, can Kevin O'Toole defend? If he can, by all means, we can put him in and have a look. But this is pretty deep water, to be honest. When you think about who, if Kevin O'Toole does start in a left-back position,
yeah,
it could be up against a Rafael Leão. It could be up against a Bernardo Silva.
And it's a strange time as well, Keith, to introduce a player into a squad, but you've got two massive games coming up. And again, because we don't know a huge amount about him, we can, I guess, understand people sitting there scratching their heads a little bit. You mentioned the amount of centre-backs we have in the squad at the moment, and surely there can be a bit of rotation or a bit of adjustment, or asking guys maybe to play a little bit out of position just for a bit more continuity.
Yeah, look, this is one of my gripes with the squads. All these players that I'm about to mention aren't out and out centre halves, but they can all play centre half. We've got Seamus Coleman, Jake O'Brien, Dara O'Shea, Nathan Collins, Liam Scales, John Egan, and Jimmy Dunn can all play centre half. And
yeah,
why we're thinking, do you know what, we'll wedge another left back into the squad. You know what, we're going to play nine at the back against Portugal.
We might have to against Portugal.
It's starting to look that way. And again, people are saying, you know, there's little green shoots within the squad. There is little green shoots, as little elements of hope, but over the last couple of years, the best teams we've been able to beat competitively are the likes of Armenia, Bulgaria, Finland, Gibraltar. Now we have to go and beat the Portuguese, and we have to go and beat Hungary. People say we beat Hungary in a friendly. That was an undercooked Hungary team that really weren't too interested. They bigger fish to fry. So I'm not too sure. Even Andrew Moran coming back into squad, he's somebody that I really like. I've seen him playing for the 21s. I've seen him playing for Brighton's under 23s. I've seen him playing for Stoke. He's gone to the MLS, to LAFC, and you're thinking he hasn't been in the last couple of squads. You're thinking, okay, obviously Hamer's thought maybe the standard over in America is not what it needs to be, or he's having a look at somewhere else. Now Andrew Moran is back in the squad. Oh, okay, Andrew Moran must be absolutely ripping America up. No, he's one goal and one assist in his last in nine games since he's been in America. So it seems very wishy washy. Sometimes you're in, sometimes you're not. Sometimes Doherty's in, sometimes he's not. I just don't know what to think. And, you know, I'm obviously very, very pessimistic all the time with this Irish team, given how we've gone over.
Well,
the
I mean, look, you have reason for it. And I think everybody feels a little bit deflated after a little bit of promise coming in, new manager, and the possibilities of what might be. It just hasn't worked out like that. Johnny Kenny's not there either. Three goals in the last two games. Do you think he's unlucky not to make it? Would you have put him in?
I would have put him in. I'd have took one of the centre halves out. I'd have just.
We need goals. Like, we have to go win these matches.
Goals. And I think people, when you go to the Aviva. Look, and again, I know being a centre half, I love defending, I love the nitty gritty and the dark arts of the game. But people go to the Aviva to see goals. They don't go to the Aviva to see good defending. And I don't get me wrong, it's an art in the game, and people neglect it at times. And I'm not for that. There's two sides of it. But if Johnny Kenny was in the squad, and maybe Evan Ferguson, we're not quite sure of his fitness at Roma. Roma are playing Rangers tonight. Wouldn't it have been great to see Evan Ferguson playing against Rangers?
I wonder what's going on there, because all the soundings were when he went over on his ankle a couple of weeks ago that he was definitely going to miss these games. Now he's back in. I just wonder how solid the ankle is as well. And as you said, where's his confidence at with the soundings from Roma? You know, obviously with what the manager said a couple of weeks back about one good training session since he's arrived, hasn't, and you know, needs to step up his work rate and really start putting in the effort. I wonder where his head's at, even if the body is okay.
Yeah, and look, to be fair, very rarely is any sort of career, and not just football career, any career in life, is it just, you know, a straight line to the top. There's always going to be bumps and, you know, ups and downs on the road. And Evan, over the last couple of years, everybody's waxed lyrical about him. He's the player Ireland need. He's going to be the next Robbie Keane. He's going to be the all-time leading goal scorer for Ireland. This is the first time he's had a little slap on the wrist, and the AC Roma manager has basically said, look, I gave you a little bit of time to bed in. I'm still not happy with what I'm seeing. And he's not talking about performances on a match day. He's talking about training
mindset,
in general, mindset and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
when a manager like that says something like that, you've got to stand up and take account of it. So this is the first time Evan's been questioned in his professional career. So I'm very, very interested to see how he bounces back, what he's all about. And like I say, very rarely will he go straight to the stop. And
just on that as well, Keith, look, everything we've heard from Evan, and I know his dad has been a big influence in his life as well, everything we've heard from the two of them suggests he will react to this. You know, he seems a mature lad, seems like he really wants this. I don't get the sense that he's just kind of drifting along, and maybe he just needed a bit of a smack in the you know what to say, look, come on, this is your chance here, let's pull your socks up and get to work.
Yeah, well, I think Evan is still a really, really young guy, and we look at him and we think, if we look at Evan's career in isolation, he's doing really, really well.
But
we're kicking him down the road because we need him to be that international striker. And again, I don't think we should put that type of pressure on him. We've done it with Troy Parrott in the early stages of his career. We've done it with Aaron Connolly in the early stages of his career. And arguably, Aaron has never bounced back. I know Troy has got back on the wagon at AZ Alkmaar and is playing really, really well. But this can scar lads. Putting all this weight on them early doors can really, really scar them. I had it back in the day at Blackburn. As soon as Damien Duff left, everybody said, well, there's somebody from Dublin who's a left winger, he's the next Damien Bang. Duff, and it can be really, really scarring. So yeah. I'm reluctant to give out to Evan or tell him he needs to do more, because I've never gone to Italy and played football. I've never walked into a dressing room that doesn't predominantly speak English. So it must be so, so difficult for him. So it's not just the football side of things, there's a human side of things, and he's a young lad.
And I get you as well, and I totally understand that, and we maybe do have to temper our expectations, but also as well, it's the potential excitement and something that we're trying to latch on to, you know. And you think about, like, you know, over the years, we struggled, obviously, at international level here. Here's a young guy that seems to have all the attributes, seems to have all the skills we need. And it's a little bit of expectation, but I think it's also excitement, you know, and it's hard to temper that sometimes.
It is, but look, the Evan Ferguson we see playing for Roma is not going to be the Evan Ferguson that plays for Ireland. The same way the Nathan Collins that plays for Brentford is not going to be the same Nathan Collins that plays for Ireland, because we're a totally different team. Nathan Collins is playing with better players at Brentford, and Ferguson is playing with better players at Roma. When you come into an Ireland camp, it has to be very, very simplistic, because everybody can sing off the same hymn sheet there. So what Evan needs to do is get realistic. When he comes into the Irish team, it's going to be fighting balls, he's going to be fighting with centre halves, he's going to be running challenges, he's going to be winning free kicks. That's not what he has to do at Roma. What he has to do at Roma is all that dirty stuff, but he's got to score goals, because you cannot be the number 9 for AS Roma if you're not scoring goals. And with the likes of Dybala and one or two others knocking about, there's a lot of talent in that team. So look, the fact that he's at AS Roma is brilliant from him. He'll be learning from brilliant, brilliant players. And even you're looking and thinking, look at Danny Welbeck at Brighton as well. He's 37, 36, he's same age as me.
Yeah, flying.
Talking about getting back into the English squad.
Yeah, it's mad,
unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah,
isn't it?
So it's amazing.
I just think it's great when people have longevity on their careers. And even if Evan, you know, when he was at Brighton, he struggled to get in, but just so much talent around at the minute.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your good feeling before, I do a couple of other things before we leave it, on the next couple of weeks? Look, I know in a sense we're a little bit lucky in that Hungary play Armenia before we play Portugal, so we'll know what we have to do. If Hungary get anything out of that game, they're a point ahead of us. If they win the match, we know we're going to have to get something against Portugal, so it's kind of there for us. It's hard to be optimistic, you know. I guess there's no point looking too far ahead, but what's your good sense of things?
Look, I think Portugal will win the game of football. Look, when you think back to the game that we played against Portugal over there, that was the worst I've seen Portugal play in a long, long time. And we were okay. We defended well for large, large periods. But I know it was a last minute goal, but nobody came away from there thinking, oh, we've been absolutely robbed, we deserved the point. It was the right result. Portugal deserved to beat us, although it was a sucker punch. And Portugal won't play that badly again. And we need to up our levels. We need to defend like our lives depend on it. And I imagine Portugal will be up around 70% possession. And I don't see us being solid enough out of possession. And when you think, like you say, I did PSG against Bayern Munich, and little João Neves come off the bench and absolutely changed the game.
Amazing.
He was unbelievable.
Amazing.
Just kept ghosting into the box and winning header after header. And when you think Vitinha, Nuno Mendes, he wasn't great for PSG during the week, but he's probably the best left back in the world as well. So a whole host of reasons to go and watch the game, but I don't think Ireland winning will be one of them.
Robbie Keane linked with the Wolves job, Keith. I know they've also made it. I think they're about to make an official approach to Middlesbrough for Rob Edwards, who's of course played over 100 times for Wolves back in the day. But like Robbie Keane, I don't know, like take Robbie Keane out for a second. Why would anyone take the Wolves job? They're going down. Like, and even if you're looking at someone like Edwards at Middlesbrough at the moment, he's doing well there, you know, they're a good side, seems to be enjoying himself. You're coming into a team that is almost certainly going down, 2 points from 10 games played so far. Like, not an easy one for them to get the right manager, I would imagine.
No, it's going to be difficult, and it's a difficult one to sell to any aspiring manager, because you like one of the big allures of going into a club is, I'll get a new manager bounce, I'll win a couple of games, there'll be a reaction in the dressing room. really doesn't matter, in my opinion. And I know mathematically Wolves have a lot of time to try and turn things around, but performances have been so poor. The manager's been fighting with the fans. The players have been fighting with the fans. They've lost Cunha and Ait Nouri and never really replaced them. And in my opinion, them two went a long, long way to keeping them both in the league keeping Wolves in the league last season. So I don't know. I think they've seen the iceberg coming, and I don't think anybody would like to go in there and come down, because there's no guarantee you will get the job for next season to rebuild. So I'm not sure. It's a strange one for Wolves to get in, but the likes of a Gary O'Neill is somebody who I think done quite well there and could possibly go back, and the fans wouldn't be too annoyed to see him.
Yeah, okay. And just finally, before we leave the football, then we'll come back to John Kennedy to later on ahead of Shelburne's game tonight. Ronaldo says Man United not on a good path. He's done one of his latest Piers Morgan interviews, which is just sycophantic rubbish if you ask me. You couldn't pay me to sit down and watch those two talk about anything. But he says United not on a good path. Amorim, of course, if anyone says anything about United, Amorim is asked to kind of respond to it. But like, I mean, Ronaldo's going to say that. I mean, it's not the club that he left, obviously, but it's a long, long time since Ronaldo lined out for Manchester United.
It is, yeah. And United are still held to that standard for some weird sort of reason.
Do you know,
reason.
Keith, I can't get it. I don't understand it, man. Yeah. Like, it's not even remotely similar club at the moment to the heyday of when he was there.
Even their stadium, Old Trafford, it really is Old Trafford, isn't it? Like, there's so many things. And look, United fans have been saying to me, I feel we've turned the corner, three wins out of the last four in the Premier League. I get that. There is a lot of good things to like about United. Casemiro all of a sudden looks like he can run around.
Yeah, reborn.
Which is it's weird. I don't like Amad Diallo at right wing back, and I know I've been banging this drum for a while now. He's brilliant going forward. He will do amazing things for you going forward, but a lot of people will pull off to the back stick when they see, I think he's 5'8". He's not big enough and he's not brave enough, and he makes weird decisions in that area because he's not a natural defender. Bruno Fernandes playing centre midfield doesn't work for me. There's an awful lot of square pegs and round holes, but they will win games, United, because they have talent, and it's got to be better than last season. It just has to be. And I think Ruben Amorim is a decent manager.
I wasn't convinced about him, but I'm starting to change my mind about him now. And I actually admire the fact that he's stuck to his guns on the shape and the principles that he wants to try and build on. And they do look a better side now than they did even a month ago.
Yeah, and it's little tactical tweaks. He's stuck to the same basic principle. There's little tactical tweaks here and there that I really, really like. The one thing I would say, if I was to poke the Manchester United fans, is they still look most dangerous when Harry Maguire plays up front and he starts pumping balls into the box. Yeah. Mbeumo is starting to come to the party. Yeah, Cunha is starting to come. I like the look of Šeško, but I don't think the tactics suit them. When they're standing on the halfway line and they're going for a full pitch press, I don't think they have the recovery speed required to get back to the green grass behind. And if you do play in behind the midfield, the recovery speed is not there, and the centre-halves don't want to jump out and engage. So there is little problems here and there. I think the elite teams within England will beat them, but you know, if they get into the top half and they challenge for European places this season, I think that would be a decent season for Manchester United.
Super stuff. Keith's going to stay with us for the rest of the show. 51552 for your text. We do have a competition to tell you about as well, and it's all thanks to the PwC All-Stars, which take place at the RDS this Friday. You can watch them live on RT1 television from 7:30. All the country's top GA football and hurling talent will be there as we honour their excellence, commitment and passion for the sport. It was 7 awards for Tipperary, the All-Ireland champions, and 10 first-time winners overall in the hurling. And if you can show your excellence on GAA knowledge today, you could be with a chance to win yourself €400 in cash, all thanks to PwC. If you fancy winning it, answer this simple question. Can you tell us who was the winner of the 2024 PwC GAA GPA Young Hurler of the Year? Was it A, Clare's Adam Hogan, or B, Limerick's Adam English? Text us now on 51552 and your answer and your name. As always, competition terms and conditions, you can see 2fm.ie. Back in a mo.
RT 2FM. This is 2FM's Game On.
And you're very welcome back. Just 3 minutes to go until half time in Greece, and it's still AEK Athens 0, Shamrock Rovers 1, Burke's penalty the difference between the sides. Okay, we're talking rugby now because Andy Farrell named his team to play Japan earlier today. The match is on Saturday. It's live on RT television as well. The big news was a new cap for Tom Farrell, the Munster centre. But Andy Farrell was speaking to Michael Corcoran about the side.
Can I ask you how much the performance last week, the result last week, influenced your thinking in terms of your team selection for the game against Japan?
Obviously, there's always that goes into every single week, isn't there? What happened the week before, but also the stage of where we're at in the season and the games that we've got coming thick and fast, four on the bounce with the travel and the jet lag and all of that, and and trying to develop and grow and get competition within the squad. It all comes into the mix, and we end up with the side that we selected.
Have you fully digested last week, and have you kind of learned from it and moved on from it and parked it?
Yeah, you digest it as soon as you can, so that the messaging can become clear, so that people can dust themselves off, understand it, recover, and get on with the job in hand. So all that's been processed. Day off today, actually, back in this evening. You know, there's always disappointment that you've got to deal with when you lose any test match. So, but at the same time, it's making sure that we learn properly from our performance, so that it helps us in the future. That's the key, isn't it? So hopefully we get a nice reaction to that this week.
How important is it to see Caelan Dorris in a starting jersey again and captaining the team?
Well, he's certainly an unbelievable player, and he's only going to keep getting better. I know that because of the attitude that he's got, the determination to get back and be as fit as he possibly could as soon as he had shows us his hunger there. His first carry coming off the bench was pretty impressive, with the leg drive, etc., which shows you that he's in good spirits, good mood, etc. Starting is what he wants to do. Captain the side is what he wants to do, and he gets to do that this weekend.
What can you say, or what can you tell us about Tom Farrell? Because, I mean, that's a story that some people would have given up 5 years ago, to be perfectly fair about it. And he's been in Munster, who have rejuvenated him over the last couple of seasons.
Yes, they have, and he's done that himself as well, through an unbelievable attitude. Resilience comes to mind, I suppose, the best word. I was here in Joe's time as an assistant coach when he came into camp for a training spell there, and that was 6 years ago, and he didn't get capped then. And 6 years later, at the age that he's at, because of the form that he's shown, and that resilience, he 100% deserves his shot, and we wish him all the best.
What are you expecting from Japan?
Well, I think you know what Japan's always been good at, and I think Eddie Jones has always coached differently with the cattle that he's got, and you know, he's coached Japan before and playing them a completely different way to what he would have coached England, etc., and rightly so. So we know that they'll want to play quick, and they'll have an attacking mindset, and that's not just with playing phases, but with their attacking kicking game and the speed that they want to play the game. So we've always got to be wary of the opposition, but concentrated on what we want to stand for is probably more important.
Can I just take you back to that hearing during the course of the week in terms of Tadhg Byrne? I mean, it was so important that was clarified and he was cleared and his good name is restored. Not that there was anything wrong with his name in the first place.
Well, his record says that anyway, because it's and to say that he remains unblemished is certainly the right call. That's for sure. You can say what you want about the incident and whatever, but the result, in my opinion, was...
This is 2FM's Game On.
Okay, that was obviously Andy Farrell talking to Michael Corcoran a little bit earlier today after he named his team to play Japan. Stephen Ferris is with us. Hey, Steve.
How's it going? You keeping well?
I'm keeping well, my man. You were always big in Japan. Most of the Irish lads were when they ever travelled over. But listen, Steve, it should be a pretty formulaic game and a formality this weekend, barring an absolute disaster, right?
Yeah, barring an absolute disaster is right, Hugh. I think, you know, a little bit of deflation last week. I think the game, all in all, I know a number of former players have commented on it who were actually in the stadium, and it did feel like the atmosphere wasn't quite there. And I think both the performances of Ireland and New Zealand weren't, they weren't, you know, both teams weren't at it. So hopefully we see an Ireland team rejuvenated, a lot of change. Some guys being wheeled out again, they'll be looking to make a bit of a bigger impact, but you're definitely right. The Japanese side shouldn't cause this Irish team too many problems, but you never know in international rugby. Yeah. And, you know, if there's another red card or two that could slow the boys down, but fingers crossed that doesn't happen again.
Just, you know, to put the New Zealand match to bed for once and for all, Steve, just haven't had a few days to reflect on it now. Is it understandable that Ireland weren't quite at the pace of it and a lot of, I guess, room for improvement, given it was their first match together in quite some time, given, I guess, Lions, and I know Ronan Keller has dismissed talk of a Lions hangover, but is it understandable that it's going to take them time under Andy Farrell and time this season to produce their best performance?
Hugh, if I was a player coming back from a Lions tour and the first game that I was playing after holidays, after a bit of a pre-season, was to play against the All Blacks, I can tell you right now that I wouldn't be firing in all cylinders. And I think the lads that have had very little game time actually, you know, did all right. But the gasket was always going to blow. It's always much more difficult to replicate the match day situation, and unfortunately they just didn't have enough of that game time over the last number of weeks. So yeah, you know, last week against New Zealand will stand them well, and you know, fingers crossed they can get the ball rolling and get a bit more positivity back, because it's fickle, the old game of rugby. Like how supporters and fans can now say that, you know, Ireland are on a bit of a slope just because they went away from home and in Chicago and got beaten by the All Blacks, who are one of the best sides in the world. So, you know, hopefully the next 3 weeks we're all ready and round to go for a Six Nations Championship just far around the corner.
Absolutely. Right, look, it's a big weekend for Tom Farrell. I mean, 32 years of age, and I'm just reading Neil Tracy's article on RTE.ie. It's 10 years. He's the oldest debutant in 10 years since Nathan White in 2015, which you might have well have been playing that game, Stevie. But look, 32 years of age, he might have thought his chance might never come. And it's incredible for him to get an opportunity this weekend.
Yeah, it is. Like, sometimes you just got to, you know, as a fan sitting watching Munster every week, and obviously with Connacht, and, you know, if you go back even further, he was in the Leinster Academy, and a short spell at Bedford Blues, and, you know, he's just hung in there. Like, and I wouldn't say he's like this flashy player that, you know, is making these ridiculous, like a bit like Brandon Driscoll, who was an X Factor player who just made things happen, who won games on his own. But like, Farrell just seems like he is a true team player. He's always there. He never lets the side down. He makes very few mistakes. Does he have the pace of a Ringrose on an outside break? Probably not. But, you know, he's shown over the last couple of seasons that he's made of sturdy stuff, and, you know, I'm really delighted for him that he's given an opportunity and against Japan to see what he's made of.
Do you know what? He's a hardy book as well, Steve. I watched him particularly last season as well for Munster, when Munster maybe weren't going great at times, but he stood out as someone who just fought for every single ball. And it just goes to show you, maybe he doesn't have that X factor as you mentioned as well, but he will give you absolutely everything out on that pitch this weekend.
Yeah, he sure will. I think he's got some engine on him. I'm sure his high running meters at the end of games are pretty off the charts. But yeah, I think the boys will, you know, get around him. It's obviously a huge week for him, the build up. You know, for his family, his friends. I know we always talk about this, but it really is. And I think it's even more special, like, when you've played the game for so long, you've been a professional rugby player for so long. A lot of international players burst onto the scene, get capped early, you know, in their early 20s, and then hopefully hang in there. But, you know, it really is a pretty cool story, and I really hope he goes well. And obviously the team get a resounding win for him.
What are your thoughts on maybe the perceived lack of X factor that Ireland have as a whole? You know, and our best 15 and maybe 23 going up against Australia and South Africa in a couple of weeks' time. Do you buy into this, that they really were missing that kind of little bit of star quality X factor that might turn a game? Or the alternative view, Stevie, which is that if everybody plays and does what they're supposed to, 115, and everybody has a good game, you actually probably don't need the X factor.
Yeah, like, it's been talked about all week, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I think just with some of the New Zealand players that come off the bench, especially early on in that game, they brought something a bit different, and that's what maybe a lot of people are talking about, you know, just having that little bit of a point of difference. Like, we were all talking, you know, a year ago that James Lowe had that, you know, and now all of a sudden just because he went okay. And, you know, he's an extra year older that everybody's sort of going, oh, well, he's not the player he used to be. I don't believe that. You also have Mac Hansen, who has been out injured, obviously, for a considerable amount of time since setting up, you know, the last World Cup alight for Ireland. We do have X-Factor players with Dan Sheehan. Like, we've got the best X-Factor tight head prop in the world in Dan Furlong.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
So there are a number of players. I think, obviously, Ryan Baird can have his day as well when he gets his hands on the ball in open space. But we got to play to our strengths. And it felt a little bit last weekend that with kicking the ball away so much that we didn't play to our strengths that we've seen in the past, with, you know, really good ball retention and, you know, taking teams through the phases and making them give away a penalty and then eking out a yellow card and just keeping the foot on the throat. You know, it just felt like we give New Zealand too many easy outs. And I think these X-Factor players that we have will, you know, hopefully be shown over the next couple of weeks.
And if you go back to some of our best performances, Steve, over the last couple of years, and I'm talking about South Africa in the World Cup, South Africa winning the Test Series as well, New Zealand in bits and parts as well, and you analyse, I guess, what went into the Ireland victories there. Like, I'd put it to you that it was a 1-23 players playing at an 8, 8.5, 9 out of 10, combining together to get us over the line. And we weren't relying on any one player to come up with a moment of magic or any kind of X factor, if you like. I still think that that's there. I mean, if you get this Ireland team 1-23 playing to a certain standard, we'd be very, very hard to beat.
It'd be very hard to beat, but to get to that certain standard, you obviously got to win a lot more line out ball, and you got to make sure that your kicks are contestable. You know, you're not missing touch off penalties. Like, you know, I think there was a couple of free kicks taken that were booted up in the air and just went 10 yards too long. As a former player and been able to comment on that, it really takes, like, the sting out of it. And it's almost like the forwards are going, oh, geez, for flip's sake, you know, put it on the money. And then I can relate, some of the backs are going, right, lads, any chance you could win a few more lineouts?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that sort of thing goes hand in hand. So, yeah, they were just slightly off it in a few areas. Some which we'll highlight on Saturday, live on RT with myself, Jamie Heaslip and Fiona Cochran, and obviously Jackie Hurley on that. So I'm going to look forward to that. But yeah, if they get ironed out a few of those wrinkles, Hugh, I think they'll definitely, you know, be in the running for getting it.
Without giving away all of your homework before you go on air, Steve, like, what is the line out a quick fix in your view? Is it something that's just not happening or should be happening, or a small adjustment here and there? I know Paul O'Connell will obviously be looking heavily at what happened last weekend in Chicago, but is it an easy fix, do you think?
Yeah, it is an easy fix. Like, these guys, they replicate the lineouts day in, day out. Like, they're having meetings in the evening. Oh, we'll do a walkthrough after dinner, lads. Yes, all right, everybody's buying into that. I think at the weekend there was a lot of dummying. So, you know, the front pod would dummy, then they'd actually take a couple of steps back, another dummy. And it almost felt like it was just taking too long for Dan Sheehan to release the ball into the lineout. And I think you might see a lot more throw jumps, you know, a lot more quicker calls just to get the ball in and get it away. Don't give the opposition the time to get off the ground. Sometimes you do throw in a couple of dummies, that's when the guys go off the ground. But New Zealand are, you know, they're an experienced side and they do have a really good lineout defence. But yeah, I think to simplify it, it just looked like it was a little bit too complicated. And obviously the first line out of the game, there was a missed call. So we need to make sure everybody's singing off the same hymn sheet.
Great stuff. Listen, enjoy it on Saturday. Pleasure as always. Thanks a million, Steve.
Cheers.
This is 2FM's Game On.
You're very welcome back. Celtic 3-0 down at half time against FC Midtjylland. So that's not what Martin O'Neill and the lads would have been hoping for there. And it's no score between Sturm Graz and Nottingham Forest. Sean Dyche, happy he's got the Forest job. Think he'll do well?
Yeah, I think he'll do. I think he'll do really well. I think the Nottingham Forest owner is a bit erratic at the best of times.
Headbanger.
Yeah, that's definitely one way of putting it.
He's up on trial in Greece now as well for all sorts of stuff that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've worked with John Dyche at Burnley, and I know the way he goes about it. Yeah. And he will definitely put a much, much better defensive shape on Nottingham Forest. And when you look at some of the players they have in an attacking role, the likes of Morgan Gibbs-White, I think, is one of the best 10s in the Premier League right now. And they've got some great wingers. And I know Chris Wood is injured at the minute, but when he comes back, you know, Sean Dyche will utilise him. He'll use all of his strengths. And yeah, it's the best squad that Sean Dyche has ever had. So a lot of people say he's a dinosaur and he's wedded to a 4-4-2 and it's all old school. I would argue he's never really had any sort of weapons at his disposal, but he does now at Nottingham Forest. So really interested to see how he goes about it.
OK, and just before we talk to Shep, What kind of chance do you give Cork City on Sunday?
Slim to none.
Slim to none.
Slim to none.
Come on now, all the rebels will be given out about you.
I will. To be honest, I said the same when St. Patrick's went to Cork. I did think, look, they've got a slim chance. When I woke up and I heard that the storm was coming, I gave Cork a little bit more of a chance because I do think Pat's shy away
from it. Make it messy, yeah.
And look, everybody knows Pat's are a wonderful footballing team, but if it's a bit bobbly and it's a bit dirty, you know, maybe there's question marks over them. So the Aviva is not going to be like that. It's going to be a big, big pitch, and Shamrock Rovers have a real, real strong squad. So I can't see anything other than a Shamrock Rovers win, but Cork have surprised me a couple of times already this season.
Okay, good stuff. Keith's going to stay with us. Jeff Shepherd, how are you?
Oh, Hugh, good to hear your voice, buddy.
It's great to hear your voice too. It's been a long, long time, my man.
That's right.
Listen, yeah, we'll get straight into it, obviously, because the Blue Jays couldn't get it done, Shep. I think the entire planet outside of Japan and everyone in the United States were hoping they could get the business done against the Dodgers, but the Dodgers go back-to-back puke.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, it's part of the world now. You know, it's just free agency, and if you're willing to spend it, you know, and you get the results, this is what happens. But, I mean, you know, Hugh, seven great baseball games. I mean, a couple of them go into extra innings. One of them is an 18-inning game that ends – you know, in a home run, and then the World Series, the winning run is a home run in the 11th inning. And I mean, just drama galore in all these games. And, you know, that 18 inning game, Shohei Ohtani reached base 9 times.
He's ridiculous. He's ridiculous.
He hit two doubles and he hit two home runs. So that was the first time anybody had ever gotten 4 extra base hits in a World Series game. And then he got walked the next 5 times, 3 times with no one on base. So, you know, the Blue Jays were basically like, hey, somebody else is going to have to beat us. And, you know, for like, 10 innings, they were right. But it just came down to it. I mean, to your point, I mean, I think mostly everybody in America and around the world was pulling for the Blue Jays. 51 million people watched that game on a Saturday night.
Mental.
When you're competing with, you know, college football in America, which is obviously, you know, a big deal over here too. So I think that also kind of speaks to just kind of where baseball is. It's kind of having a little bit of a rebirth now, you know, especially here in America and potentially around the world with the likability of Shohei Ohtani. I mean, the arguments are now being made he's the best player ever.
Yeah, and you know, rightly so. I mean, he's an absolute phenomenon. But you mentioned the viewing figures there. I think 238 million across the World Series. There was 13.1 million Japanese tuned in for Game 6 as well. I mean, you mentioned the kind of resurgence in popularity. If you're in Ireland and you're not paying attention, this might pass you by. But clearly baseball is on the up, Jeff.
Yeah, and look, you know, they've done some things. Obviously, you know, look, they've had foreign players in baseball for 50, 60 years now. So that's not a new phenomenon. But the Japanese players, you know, like Ichiro, that played with the Mariners for so long. And I mean, these guys just bring like cult followings with them, you know. And so they're superstars by the time they get to America. You know, they added this pitch clock a couple of years ago. So the games are sped up. They're trying to get, you know, the younger demographics involved in watching baseball. You know, you've got a bunch of young superstars like Paul Skeens, and then obviously Ohtani, and you know, the Mets have got a bunch of young guys too, like Lindor, and you know, so they're doing a good job of kind of marketing the youth. And I know it sounds so old when I say the youth, but I mean they really are.
It's not us,
and
yet.
but it pays off. Yeah. No, I'm right, but it pays off. I mean, look at it. I mean, to your point, I mean, more than 200 million people in America watching it, and you know, this was done over a week. I mean, it was exciting baseball played over a week. And so, you know, I don't think you could have asked for anything more.
Yeah.
And look, here's the other thing. The Blue Jays were last in the AL East a year ago, and they're in the World Series and a couple outs away from winning the whole thing this year. So that's just incredible.
Yeah, no, absolutely amazing. And it's obviously a big resurgence as well. And well done to the LA Dodgers, despite my comments earlier on. Look, just quickly, we'll switch to the NFL, if you don't mind, because we're almost halfway through the season, Shep. And just the state of play at the moment here. So, look, obviously for many people, the Chiefs will still be right up there as favourites to go and win another Super Bowl. The Bills, my team that I've supported for the last few years and have come up short the whole time, look like they're starting to hit form at the right time here, and one or two surprises in between. But how do you see the NFL season at this stage?
So the Bills beat the Chiefs this past Sunday in Buffalo. You know, the Chiefs have this thing, Hugh, that, you know, if you're paying attention, it's like you're not going to pick against them in a single game situation. But on the whole, you know, they've kind of struggled this year, at least to the way that they have typically been playing. They didn't have a great game, you know, Sunday evening up in Buffalo. The Bills kind of righted the ship. But I still think it's those two teams. Now, look, the Indianapolis Colts made a big trade this week. They traded for Sauce Gardner off the New York Jets, who plays in the secondary, and they gave up two future first-round draft picks. So that tells you the Colts are all in on this season. They really think they have an opportunity to get deep into the playoffs, into the Super Bowl. So I wouldn't rule those guys out either. And then over in the NFC, you know, the NFC North, they're just beating the hell out of each other, where the Packers lose a crazy game to the Panthers, and you've also got the Lions, and now you got J.J. Darnold back for the Vikings. The Eagles are still sitting there. The Bucs in Tampa play New England this week in Drake May, and they've been phenomenal. They're going to give Buffalo a run for money in the NFC AFC East. So there's still no kind of like clear-cut dominant team that everyone is chasing. It's really kind of wide open, which is exactly what the NFL wants. They don't want teams, you know, just – I mean, look, they love a 15-0 story, but, you know, that's the team that's running away with the whole thing. I mean, when it's close and competitive like this, you have to watch every week, and that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, and I even see the Patriots, everybody's favorite team to hate, are actually doing pretty well. Their new coach, Mike Vrabel, seems to make quite an impression there.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, right off the Belichick tree. And look, they've got a quarterback now that they haven't had for the last couple of seasons since Brady left. And a whole lot of your world gets put on the right course in the NFL if you've got a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. Shep, on that note, we will leave it. Thanks, my man. Great to talk to you.
All right, you. Thanks, buddy.
Cheers. Jeff Shepherd every Thursday night. Okay, from America to right here in Dublin, Talent Stadium. JK is on the line. Hey, John.
Hello, Hugh.
How are you doing, my man?
I'm very good, old pal.
What about those Shamrock Rovers boys? They're flying
That's brilliant.
In Greece. Isn't it great?
Yeah, half-time, AEK nil Shamrock Rovers. Won. They're under fierce pressure. We've been watching it here. But Graham Burke had a penalty for them. So, and it's some of the players are second string because obviously the concentration for them is to get the double on Sunday. And I know Keith has been giving
Cork
City absolutely
no chance.
I heard
none.
That.
Yeah. He's going to get awful abuse next time he's down in the Rebel County.
Actually, he gets abuse and he's used to it.
He does. Yeah. Come here, how are we looking for tonight, Shells?
Yeah, one draw and a defeat so far for Shells in the two Conference League games they played. So a win tonight against the Kosovan side, Drito. Pretty imperative for Joey O'Brien's side, who are looking to push their way towards the knockout stages. Drita, known as the Intellectuals, they're a four-time Kosovan Super League champions, the last earlier in 2025. They've played four games in the Champions League this season before dropping to the Europa League, now to the Conference League. They qualify for the group stages like Shelburne. They've racked up two draws, one against Cups of Finland and a home draw against Ammonia Nicosia of Cyprus. Drita have never played a League of Ireland team, so Shell's the first one. So the Reds can now concentrate fully on the Conference League, having already qualified for next season's Europa League, having finished third in the League of Ireland Premier Division last Saturday. And we have the Shelburne team. It looks like a pretty attacking line. Up. Okay. Vesel Spiel is in goal. Milan Mbeng, Paddy Barrett, McEnroy, Kane McEnroy, and Jamie Norris across the back. Then it'll be Jack Henry Francis, Mark Coyle, their captain, and Harry Wood, who's scoring for fun these days. JJ Lunny, Udabeko, and Daniel Kelly. And both McEnroy and Jack Henry Francis have been nominated for the Soccer Writers Player of the Month as well. So they're in pretty good form. 8 o'clock kickoff here. It's a wonderful night. And hopefully you get a decent crowd in, and hopefully Shells can rack up a victory here.
Do you know, I never thought I'd have something in common with Drita, but the Intellectuals suits me just fine, JK, as you can attest to.
Well, it was a team apparently that was set up about 75 years ago with a bunch of school teachers and doctors. And
lovely, my kind of
people.
And
they were called the Intellectuals.
Good stuff. Enjoy the match tonight. Good
Thanks,
stuff.
Thanks, Hugh.
Tallaght Stadium, John Kelly and Judy there. Right, before I let you go, Liverpool, Man City, who wins?
Oh, it's going to be really,
it's
really
going to be a cracker.
Sorry, the Shamrock Rovers game has just took me eye.
Go on.
They've put the ball into the back of the net, AEK Athens.
Was it offside?
The linesman is given offside, so VAR are going to have a look at it now, but it's not the initial header. The initial header is fine, then McGinty saves it, and while he's on the ground, one of the Athens players come out with a pack and just bundle it over the line. Mm. But thankfully, it's been given as offside, and Shamrock Rovers saw a little bit of relief.
Yeah, good stuff. Right, go on. Liverpool or Man City, put your colours on that mast.
Well, look, if you had to go by form, it depends on which Manchester City turn up. You could probably say the same about Liverpool, to be honest with you. I was reading Arsene Wenger's comments about Liverpool's midfield being absolutely ruined since Florian Wirtz has come into it. I wouldn't go as heavy as that. I do think there's improvement to be made. Florian Wirtz hasn't quite hit the ground running, but he's getting better with every little game. I think physicality is a real, real problem for him.
Yeah.
But if they defend like they have been doing over the last couple of weeks, Liverpool, Erling Haaland is going to have an absolute field day.
And so will Foden on the judgment of last night as well.
But look, Liverpool have an awful lot of weapons up their sleeve as well. And I'm still waiting on Mohamed Salah to come to the party. I know he scored a goal the other day, but Martinez, the Aston Villa goalkeeper, pretty much just handed it to him on a plate. So I'm expecting him to come to the party. I'd love a draw from an Arsenal point of view.
Loads of goals and a draw. 3-3 draw like Brugge and Barcelona last night in the Champions League.
That'll do.
Keith, pleasure, man. Thanks so much.
Cheers, you.
Ron Lawler produced tonight. Ger McCarr from Churchtown in Dublin wins that €400 cash thanks to PwC, who correctly answered that the young hurler of the year last year was Clare's Adam Hogan. So well done to Ger McCarr from Churchtown in Dublin. Okay, that's about our lot for tonight. Shane Dawson is back tomorrow from 6 o'clock. Up next here on 2FM, it's a new music show from us. Take it easy.
This is 2FM.